The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening. And I'd like to talk a little bit this evening about intention, the role of intention in our lives. And I believe that I'm partly inspired by having just come back from a 10-day retreat, teaching a retreat. And as often the case, I was very much inspired or touched by the intention of people who come for 10 days and devote themselves to practicing mindfulness, showing up, being present, perhaps becoming compassionate to their experience and to themselves. And it's quite something to watch some people be able to follow through on it, or attempt to follow through on an intention much of the time, the waking hours for 10 days in a row. Mostly in daily life, we might have an intention or many intentions, but they get interrupted. Or we might follow it for a little while and then we forget about it. Even large-scale intentions for one's life that directs and direction the whole life someone takes, the original kind of motivation that fueled that decision might be forgotten as we kind of get involved in the busyness of our life. I've known people who have been motivated by compassion to go to medical school, only to have the compassion somehow squeezed out of them in the intensity of that training that they go through. But here in the retreat, there's a chance to follow through on the intention, you know, if you want, all your waking hours. And it's kind of a very unusual opportunity to have that kind of concentration of intention. Many people associate retreats with concentration or mindfulness or calm or, you know, but I think one of the very significant aspects of a retreat is the way in which it strengthens intention. And we say in Buddhism that your intentions that you act on are like seeds. And you plant those seeds, you act on those seeds, and in some way or other they sprout and grow and flower. The teachings of karma, which are connected to the teachings of intention, say something approximately like, the intention which fuels your actions is in turn fueled by those actions. So it's kind of a circle. So the quality of the intentions that fuel how you act in the world in turn is fueled by the actions. So it means that if your actions are fueled by hate, and then you act, those hateful actions in turn fuel the hate within you. If your actions are fueled by your love, then those acts of love in return come back and fuel the capacity for love. So sometimes you can see that directly, and sometimes something that builds kind of invisibly over time, where the capacity for love or the capacity for hate or some other quality gets strengthened and developed and comes forth, bursts forth in unusual ways in our lives. When I think about intention today, I was thinking about two sides to Buddhist practice. There is the active side and there's a passive side. There's the side where we engage, push forward, and there's a way in which we are receptive. There's the practice of the side of strength and the side of letting be or being soft. There's a side of having intention and there's a side of allowing things to be, of letting go. The intentional side, I think of the positive side, the strengthening side, the active side. Many people associate meditation with being somewhat receptive or passive, and many meditation teachers will emphasize the receptive, the passive side of meditation, because many people err on the side of being too active, too busy, trying to make things happen. But in fact, what's needed is a balance between the two. And I'm fond of the Buddha statue because of kind of a symbolic representation that it kind of holds. And one of the ways it holds is it's meant to hold the balance between the receptive and the active, or the active and the passive sides. The statue shows someone being upright, vertical, straight up. So it takes some strength, some capacity to be upright in this world. And at the same time as being upright, it's meant to be a posture in a body which is deeply relaxed in that upright posture. So this combination of the active and the passive, or the active and the receptive, or the calm and the energetic, are somehow meant to be demonstrated in this the kind of statue of the Buddha. Some people, in trying to cope with their life, will err on the side of relaxing. There's been trends, for example, in physical healing over the decades. And there was a time, I think some of you maybe remember, those of you, you know, back in the 1930s or 20s, that was, no? Where the emphasis, the kind of language sometimes was that of strengthening, was to strengthen yourself. And then the emphasis has been, in some decades, was more relaxing, just relax and be cool and mellow, and right? But some injuries, for example, in order to heal, require strengthening. Some injuries require relaxing. So in our own kind of inner life, psychological life, there are some situations that require more the active principle of strengthening, and some require more the passive principle, maybe of relaxing. For now, I'd like to call intention, having a motivation or a sense of purpose for what we do, belongs to the active side, and so requires some active engagement with the question of intention. It's really helpful with practicing with the intention to spend time, conscious time, contemplative time, thinking about, reflecting on your intentions. And if you you can think about an intention of the moment, my intention is to go shopping. You can think about the intention of the conversation, my intention here is to be helpful to my friend. But to step back and look at the big picture of your life, and you know, what is the intention? What's the intentionality, the aspiration? What's the fundamental purpose or motivation that's going to fuel this life of mine? There have been periodic times in my life where I've gone off for many days to reflect on these things. When I turned 50, some years ago, I went for a backpacking trip in the Sierras by myself, with one of the purposes was to spend those 5 days with this juncture of 50, arbitrary juncture, of reflecting what was going to be my intention, to kind of reflect on my life, to look at my life, consider how I go forward in my life, and what the purpose or the motivation was for that kind of thing. I found that very, very useful to do, and I've done that periodically in my life. And I know that it's possible to live a life so focused on day-to-day existence that we forget to get the big picture of our life, what's really important for us. And then even, let alone the big picture of a lifetime, what about the big picture of the day? You know, as you get up in the morning, what's the intention for this day? What's the intention? So, for example, your intention, you know, one of the intentions for the day might to go to the market and buy food. You can follow through on that and go home. But if the intention was to go to the market and buy food and come home, it's a fine intention if you need food. But I would suggest it's a missed opportunity. Because if before you go shopping, you think, what intention do I want to infuse this activity with? You can infuse it with other intentions as well. You can, for example, infuse it with the intention that when you go shopping, you're going to try to be around people in the store, with the clerks and whatever, in a way that's kind. the way that somehow expresses friendliness. So you're still following through on the intention to get food, but then you're infusing it with more. You're multitasking, which is very popular. So you multitask with your intention. It doesn't take a lot more out of you to decide to go to the store and try to be friendly. But in the big picture of your life and what gets developed and supported and what fuels this wonderful reciprocal way in which our actions then can feed back and support our intentions, the intentions you choose to act on or live your life by are very consequential. And if you stop and think about it, what do I really want to do with this life? What do I really want to do today? What's really important for this day, that this day that I am lucky enough to be alive for? You know, is the most important thing I can think of doing is just going to the store and buy food? I have to buy food. Is there something more meaningful and valuable to do in this moment? I would suggest that there is. What about being present? What about being awake? What about not being distracted and lost and confused by all the choices? And what about choosing not to give in to greed, desire, ambition, or many other things that might get the upper hand? If we don't think about it ahead of time and try to infuse our life with some values that are more meaningful. So to have an intention, and to have a sense of intention and purpose, and then to act on that, is kind of like a ballast that keeps our sailboat upright. It's a compass that keeps us going steadily ahead. I've been very impressed, both in my own life and the life of many people that I've known, and at the how consequential intentions, ongoing intentions that we act on can be. So, for example, someone might go to a meditation retreat and might have the intention, I'm going to really be present. Finally, I'm going to be present, I'm going to be concentrated. That's my goal and purpose, because then I can maybe kind of see clearly and be free of all my suffering. Something like that. And they do this retreat, and it turns out they fail miserably at being present and concentrating. Just miserably. They're like the Buddha's disaster at concentration. However, every moment, or many of the moments on the retreat, with great sincerity and dedication, they tried to be present and get concentrated. And as they did that, and they failed, they tried again, they had, and kept coming back to that intention, they had to cultivate patience, they had to cultivate perseverance, this kind of inner strength and dedication. They had to cultivate forbearance. They had to cultivate maybe greater compassion. They had to cultivate maybe letting go of all the judgments that came up about how poorly they're doing, so they can apply themselves again and again. If the measure was only about getting concentrated, you could say they failed. But if the measure was how they developed inner strength and capacities, they succeeded. Following through an intention, the results of that is not necessarily measured by how we succeed. If the intention is a good one, wholesome and sincere one, then other things are being fed within us, other things are being developed. And I've known people who have struggled on retreats. And they wondered at the end of the retreat, well, that wasn't worth it. Was that worth it? What was that about? And then they've come back to me 6 months later and said, that retreat was so important for me because I really learned to understand myself in challenging situations. I learned how to be patient in difficult circumstances, and I learned to kind of not react in unskillful ways. And I went back to, you know, some kind of very, there was a very difficult family thing that happened, and it was very painful and hard. And this, what I learned on that retreat allowed me to stay balanced and calm so that I supported and helped the whole family go through this crisis. At the time of the retreat, they were measuring it one way. But 6 months later, they saw that the struggles of the retreat had benefits down the line. So there's something about following through on intention, even if you don't succeed, which can be very, very helpful. And it might actually, in some ways, be more useful. But also, when we do follow ahead on intention, it feeds and develops the very thing that is being motivated, that is motivating it. And so then the question is, what is it that we want to feed and develop in our lives? So to reflect on what is your motivation? What are your motivations and wishes for your life that you have? It's interesting to look and see what answers you come up with. And then to look more carefully at those answers, if you have some. Are the answers that come up, the motivations for your whole life, the motivations for this day, the motivation for this activity, are that they really represent the values and the purposes that you want your life to be about? Do you know what you want your life to be about? Do you know what's most important for you in your life? What's your heart's deepest intention? What is it? Is your heart's deepest intention to earn your first million by the time you're 27? There are such people. And from a Buddhist point of view, chances are that that doesn't really cultivate the kind of qualities of heart that Buddhism is trying to champion. Chances are. Maybe it does. There was a young man who came to America from Japan. And I don't know when it was, long ago. Well, many, many decades ago. And to study engineering at UC Berkeley. And he kind of looked around and thought that America needs some Buddhism. But as a poor engineering student, he didn't think he could do much. So he vowed that he would make a lot of money. He went back to Japan and started some big engineering something company and was very, very successful, became a multimillionaire. And he then set up a publishing house, Buddhist publishing house, that published translations of the Buddha's teachings in all kinds of languages, and kind of like the Gideon's Bible, you know, would stick them in libraries and all over. And now they have a kind of, and he opened up, he endowed all these chairs in American universities for Buddhist studies. You know, I don't know how many, a dozen or different chairs. They're called for visiting professors for one semester a year. They come and they can do a whole list of things, all kinds of translation projects. So his intention as a young man to get wealthy, first million by 27, was not fueled by just the desire for money itself, but rather he had this great vision of something else that he was kind of working towards. And he was lucky enough to succeed for his vision. So to look at the answer that comes up for you, and then look more deeply at it, more carefully at it. Is this really what you want your life to be about? And or what's the nature of this, of the answer you get? And by this I mean, if your deepest intention you come up with is stated negatively, to live without fear, to not have conflict, to be left alone. in some negative way, then I'd encourage you to try to restate it positively in this way. If you attained what you hoped for, a life of no fear, if you got that, then what is your intention? Is there a positive version? Oh, once there's no fear, then what I hope is to love. That's what's important. And that positive expression perhaps comes from some deeper motivation, some deeper purity or beauty inside of us than the motivation that talks about the absence of something. Perhaps. So I find many times in working with people, I've suggested they kind of look at the other side of negative statements, negative intentions, and see what's the positive one. Another issue around intentions is looking at the intention you have and asking if it's compensatory. Are you compensating for something? Or is the intention somehow not compensating for a lack or insecurity or fear or something like that? But rather, instead of compensating for something, it actually feels like a bubbling up of something which is innate, something which kind of stands on its own, something which doesn't depend, doesn't live in reaction to some conditions of the world or conditions of our psychological mind. So to kind of scratch, to kind of look deeper into this idea of intention, motivation, and question it and wonder what it is, what goes on. I've spent a lot of time in my life reflecting and thinking about intentions. There are some times where it's pretty clear quickly. Sometimes when it's not such a big deal, maybe a few minutes I can think about what I want. But there have been some big decisions I've made in my life where I've spent, I spent a whole year spending time thinking and reflecting on my intention. Wondering, is this really a good intention? What's fueling this intention? What's the motivation behind the intention? I doubted my own purity or sincerity. I thought, well, maybe this intention is not really pure. Maybe there's a lot of ego in it. Really what I want is to kind of build up, you know, get a badge of honor as the best guy on the block or something, you know, to look really good in the eyes of a lot of women. Or something. And I didn't quite trust it. So I spent a year looking at this intention, looking. It was an intention to be of service. And I didn't really trust people who wanted to be of service. You know, kind of like had some doubts about, you know, why they want to do it. So I spent a whole year looking and thinking and wondering, exploring myself. After a year, I decided that the intention to be of service for me was in fact pure enough. that's something I could act on. So that's quite something to do, reflect on that, you know, that long time. Connected to this whole issue of intention and our deepest intention is values that do drive your life, and where have you learned those values? And many people, the intentions they're acting on were never their own to begin with, but rather were received intentions from our family and our society. Our family tells us that we should be, you know, you're supposed to go to college. You know, some of you probably never, who went to college probably never questioned it. Or some of you, the family said, you know, that was the last thing your family was thinking about was college. In fact, there was kind of a negative attitude towards college, or an impossible idea. That's impossible for us in our situation. And really, what we need to do, you know, the values being given are something very different. Some of the values we receive from in society are very limiting. Some people have learned limiting values or ideas that they can't succeed. I can't do that. That's not possible for me. Someone told me today that she grew up with her parents telling her that what she wanted in her life, she shouldn't give too much attention to what she wanted in her life and pursue whatever, because she would have to follow her husband someplace when she got married. And so she internalized that very deeply. So what, you know, whose values, whose ideas of what your life should be about do you live by? And if it's something that you've received from outside of you, is that something that you really are ready to stand behind and be behind? So to reflect on intention, spend time, regular time, looking at it, questioning it, doubting it, and then when you're clear enough about it, acting on it, following through on it, taking some risks with it. This is the active side of Buddhism. The problem with the active side of Buddhism is it can reinforce the idea that we're in charge, that it's up to us. That's, you know, it can reinforce a sense of ego, egotism, and all that. If you're paying mindful attention, you'll see the difference between egotistical motivation and motivations which don't have much ego involved in them. And how you can see the difference is that egotistical motivations are always painful. But egotistical motivations often camouflage their own pain. Kind of partly by putting on blinders, we don't see it. But to know, the suffering or the pain of egotism is part of to see that as part of the protection. But I'd like to offer, as an ending here, another word instead of intention or motivation, that perhaps is a word or a concept that presents kind of a balance between the active side and the passive side, or the active side and the receptive side. Because the receptive side that allows life to move through us, allows life to occur without our constant kind of interference and engineering of it, is a very important part of meditation, a very important part of a Buddhist life. But an intentional part is also important. Just like the Buddha statue has both the active and the receptive, the active and the passive, the energetic and the calm, working together. Is there some word that combines both the active and the receptive around the idea of intentionality and motivation? And I would like to propose that a beautiful word that can do this is the word dedication. And so you can ask yourself, what is your life dedicated to? And because dedication also has this feeling of something you give yourself towards. Some of the dictionary definitions of dedication have to do with consecrating, handing something over, making something sacred, and giving something over to what's sacred. And so it's not just about you. When you dedicate something, it's not just about you, what's in there for you, but it's what you're giving towards, what you're offering towards, what you're dedicating towards. So what's your life dedicated to? Is your life dedicated to the pursuit of fame and power and money? Is your life dedicated to the pursuit of security, safety? Is your life dedicated to having as many friends on Facebook as you can? Or is your life dedicated to being really good friend to the friends that you actually spend time with and see? Or maybe even the ones on Facebook. Or is your life dedicated towards love, dedicated towards compassion, dedicated towards waking up, finding out this wonder, the key, finding out the how to live in this life peacefully without having to live a sense of conflict and tension, stress about in this challenging life that we have? Some intentions are much more meaningful and valuable for us than others. And to be able to negotiate and find your way through the plethora of different choices we have is an essential part of living a spiritual life. There has to be some sifting, or winnowing, or willow, separating out, separating the wheat from the chaff. There has to be some kind of separation of making our way through all the different choices we have and all the different possible motivations that we live our life by. Because if you have too many things you're trying to do, you probably won't do many of them well. But if you can narrow down to really what's most important for you and then follow through, you'll probably be amazed at the obvious and not so obvious ways in which it strengthens you, develops you, and hopefully supports a very happy and giving life. those are my thoughts on intention. I hope those are okay for you. We have about 10 minutes. So if some of you would like to ask some questions about this topic or about anything else, you're welcome. This would probably be a good time. I'd like to hear. Or commentary about it, or protests.
Sometimes you are aware your ego is present, but you know it's there, and you are seeking a more meaningful life or purpose.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see that you know that the purpose, what you want to achieve, is far more important than your ego. You know your ego is here. You cannot neglect it, but you can kind of push it away. You know, when you say, no, it's not for that purpose. Because sometimes we can get lost thinking that it's the ego that is there. That's why you do it. But ultimately, it's not. So.
Yeah, it's. That's why it took a year once for me to reflect. So it's not obvious always. Sometimes it's well worth doing reflection, thinking. Go for a walk with a friend and talk about it. And get your friend to help you think it through if possible. Get really quiet. Go on a retreat. Some people go on retreats so they can get quiet enough and still enough to allow some deeper way of making decisions or looking at intentions. It's not easy. And sometimes our motivations are mixed. You know, there's a percentage of the motivation is, if you use this language, is pure, and a percent of it is not. And I think it's a real pity. Like if you want to help someone, and you look at yourself and say, well, you know, 70% of my motivation is genuinely to really help this person without any benefit for me. But 30% of it is I want to attain a better status in among all my neighbors. I want them to really praise me to no end about how wonderful, I'm one of the best neighbors on the block. And you realize that's not very pure. And if I do that, then they'll invite me over so that I could watch the Super Bowl on their television. Whatever. So you realize, well, that's not really pure, you know, it's kind of, you know, to help someone because of what you can get in return. So remember, 70% wholesome, 30% unwholesome, unskillful. I think it's a real pity to sacrifice the 70% which is good by the 30% which is unskillful. It gives too much power to the unskillful side of us. So, of course, many times we have mixed motivations. Some people are so hypersensitive to, they're oversensitive to the unskillful, unhealthy side of their psychology, that they give it so much power. It's kind of a pity. And if the majority of the value of what you're doing is healthy and good, maybe it's better to act on it and put up with the unwholesome side. And work on it. You know, work on it, look at it. The other thing is that the egotistical side is something to be respected. Being egotistical is also gets a very bad rap in spiritual circles. I think that what we try to do in this practice here, Vipassana practice, is not to really give any bad rap to anything. And that's why I'm reluctant to use too much the word purity and impure. It's all stuff to investigate. So what we might call egotistical, and then bad sense of egotistical, rather than being dismissive of it or be at war with it, what happens if you turn your attention directly and look at it directly and really study it and look what's going on there? Because you might find that under the surface of it, deep inside, it itself might be a unskillful way of trying to accomplish something which is beautiful. So, for example, someone might be egotistical and acting like an arrogant, I'm going to use the B word, I won't tell you which one. You Then we can poll you all as you're leaving. So you can guess which one I was. But if you really look at that, you might see that deep inside of that is a real desire to feel safe. And being arrogant is just kind of a dysfunctional way of trying to become safe. But if you can really turn and be very, very respectful and kind and compassionate, really look and be present for a long time, really look at the place of arrogance or egotism, and kind of let it kind of dissolve the surface of it and see what's really going on there. I've seen so many times, over and over again, that if you trace it back down to its roots, it usually comes to something beautiful. So it's very important not to be quickly dismissive. You might not want to act on the arrogance, but it's very useful to turn around and look at it and see it and be with it. And that's an intention. The intention to learn to be present for whatever's there. The intention to be kind and compassionate to whatever's there. The intention to learn and look more deeply at what's there. Those are all very significant intentions that when we act on those, they feed and develop something really deep and profound in us. So, one more, maybe. Yeah?
You may have just answered it, but are there questions you asked yourself during this year that made you more in touch with your intentions?
Yeah, some of them I said. I mean, one of them I was most concerned with was the purity of it. Was it egotistical? What was the motivations? I had a certain intention to be of service, and then I asked myself, now what's motivating that intention? Just the fact that intentions themselves are fueled by other intentions, by other motivations, other values. So what were the values? What was the intention? What was I trying to accomplish? Questions like that. I just asked them over and over again. It's kind of boring, but... Okay. So, I'm going to let you go 4 minutes early. Very generously. But only because I'm giving you 4 minutes of your life for you, rather than listening to me talk away. And for you to use those 4 minutes sometime in the next 24 hours to quietly and reflect on what is your life's deepest intention. What's your heart's deepest intention?
So. We only get 4 minutes.
The only thing that I can give you now is 3 minutes. I would hope you'd spend more time, but I can only get away with, I can't give you more. I can't give you a year, though. I'd like to. You can take it, please. So thank you all.